Exactly.
Well, and that is, by the way, exactly how I first heard of you. I was a child at the time, but, you know, I was very much influenced by my parents and around them all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that my mom and her friends would talk about, you know, over coffee at the kitchen table or while outside drinking lemonade on the patio and watching us kids and, you know, trying us kids, you know, trying to make us behave or whatever. One of the things that they would talk about is, you know, things in general life. And one of the things that happened during that time was you were on many radio programs and TV shows. And they, of course, would hear not only, they talk about not only the show, whether they saw it or they heard someone who saw it, mm-hmm. but also the after effects of the show. Because whenever you did a show, it went on and on because, Yuri, the people would come up for weeks afterwards, you know, with their spoons or bent keys or mm-hmm. what have you, and mm-hmm. say, look, this happened while he was on this and that show. This, mm-hmm. look at this. It's bent, you know. And,
yeah.
Or this watch is working or you know, I mean, the things would happen for weeks afterwards.
Mm-hmm. I know. You know, some of the more incredible things that the mind can do, and I proved it in laboratories. First of all, you must understand that I was taken out of Israel by the American Defense Department. And, you know, I can reveal now that they actually made a deal with the Israeli Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, whereby the government, probably the CIA did the deal, that they would provide Israel with satellite photos of certain sensitive areas in the Middle East, because this was in 1969-70. Mm-hmm. Israel was, in a way, preparing for the Yom Kippur War, knowing that there will be a war. And they let me go. So I was taken out by a group of scientists. The leading scientist was Captain Edgar Mitchell, who was actually the astronaut who walked on the moon. And Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff from Stanford Research Institute, but they were contracted by ARPA, Advanced Research Project Agency, which is a very sort of secretive Defense Department agency, and they basically wanted to validate my powers because the CIA at that time was getting information out of Russia that the KGB were dabbling into something called the paranormal, and they had people who could move matches and light matches and influence compass needles and so forth. And that's when a very unusual life began for me, because from one side I was a guinea pig. I mean, I was tested from Stanford Research Institute. They then took me to the Lawrence Livermore Radiation Labs. You know, that's where they build nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. From there they took me to the American Naval Surface Weapons Center. And I can't really elaborate what I was asked to do in these tests, but some of them were written up, some of them were sort of managed to be leaked out to the press. And then I was even introduced to Wernher von Braun, who was, you know, he was a Nazi. He built the V-1 and V-2 and then came over to America and became a NASA scientist. So you can imagine me, an Israeli kid, whose, you know, family was wiped out in the Holocaust. Here I am standing next to this doctor, this scientist who was starting this NASA, you know, space program. So I went through very unusual times, and then the controversy began. You know, the magicians who attacked me, and I, you know, again, I didn't realize how important it is to be controversial. First, because I was young and rather naive and gullible, I thought it would finish me off. But on the contrary, the more controversy, the better I became known, the more television shows wanted me on and so on. And then I started branching out into dowsing. So I found oil fields and gold mines for companies. And then I couldn't handle that. I became obsessed with money. I was on a massive ego trip. All I cared about was fame and fortune. And, you know, my friends were Elvis Presley and John Lennon. I lived next to John Lennon near the Dakota Building. We were, you know, 10 years together in New York. Andy Warhol and Dali and Studio 54 and all these celebrities. I wanted to be a celebrity myself at that time, but I wasn't. I wasn't a singer and I wasn't an actor. I was in a way a freak. And then I became bulimic. I had bulimia. I had panic attacks. I had anxiety attacks. So I really went through hell to find myself. And it was actually John Lennon and Yoko Ono that changed my life by telling me, look, give everything away that you have. At that time, I had apartments in Manhattan, houses in Connecticut, in Greenwich. I mean, I had, you know, speedboats and everything, houses in England. And I gave all my belongings away. I practically gave everything away. I flew to Japan with my family. My kids were small. They were toddlers. I got my wife, my mother, my brother-in-law on the plane, and we flew to Japan, landed in Narita Airport. I rented a van, drove to Mount Fuji, because I always felt a spirituality there. Because John Lennon told me, do you know what spirituality means? And I said, no, what is it? And he said, well, when you find it, you will stop all this crazy bulimia stuff and panic attacks. And I drove into Mount Fuji, into a forest, and I disappeared for a year with my entire family. We lived in a shack right in the middle of the forest. And I think that was the point that changed my entire life. And then I came back to civilization simply because my children had to go to school. And that's how I really discovered that there is so much more than materialistic stuff. I'm not saying it's not good to have. I still live in a nice house. And, you know, but I don't have any more the desire. I'm not in the business of making money anymore. And I think that's when someone can really be motivated and inspired to help others. And that's really what I do today.
Well, you know, we I should say maybe more along the lines, I preach that just about every week here, Yuri. There's especially nowadays, it seems, in especially in America, as you know, we're always being pushed by the media, by television shows themselves, by everything. It's all involved. We're pushed, we're prodded, we're kicked into certain directions every day by people that tell us, well, this is the cool thing this week. This is what you have to have this week. You have to have this automobile because it's cool. It'll make you get women.
Yeah.
It'll make you get men. That's the motivational thing right there. You see it in the advertising. And most people, and I don't mean this is a bad thing, most people just don't, they neglect to pay attention to these things. They just go, oh, yeah, that's a cool car. I'll go buy one. They don't think about what they're doing, really. They just say, well, this is what's in right now. This is what's happening. This new Somerset collection of purses is great. It'll look great on my shoulder, and people will think that I'm part of the high society because I have this purse.
Until next season.
Yeah, until you
when it'll
another.
Be another
exactly.
fashion
yeah,
accessory.
But you must agree that it is a part of being successful. And, you know, shows like with Donald Trump, you know, and, you know, all these huge celebrity-driven shows, you know, they are bombarded day in, day out. So people want to be successful. People want to be up there. They want to say, look, I got a great car. I've got a big house. I can send my children to great schools. It is a part of humanity. It's a part of being a human being. You want to have the best. But there's nothing wrong with that as long as you know your true values. Because money can become a positive tool, but it can also become a negative tool. If you know where your priorities are, and if you're a good person, a loving individual who also finds time to help others, then you're on the right track. So it's okay to be successful, to be motivated and inspired, to say, hey, I made it. Good for you. As long as you remember where you come from and you respect others that are still struggling. Because look, let's face it, Scott, Doug, and Will, we are right now, we're speaking, you know, over the phone, you know, I'm thousands of miles away from you. Technology is amazing. We've sent people to the moon and back, yet we cannot cure cancer. And the most tragical thing is that as we speak right now, if you count 3 seconds, like 21, 22, 23,
mm-hmm.
a baby just died somewhere around the world from hunger.
Mm.
Yet, you know, we're spending thousands of billions of dollars in the arms race. We're still building nuclear weapons. We still have troops in Iraq. American soldiers are still dying every week,
mm-hmm.
sometimes every day.
Yes.
So there is no peace, really. There are still homicide bombers. There are still small but very dangerous terrorists loose out there.
Mm-hmm.
We still have to be alert and awake because some of these terrorists know the know-how how to assemble and create a small, dirty nuclear bomb, which can be placed in a suitcase and left downtown Philadelphia somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then we've got natural disasters. We are polluting our planet. We are burning the rainforests. The lakes, the rivers, and the oceans are polluted. We still emit poisons and toxins into the atmosphere. And yet we are calling ourselves an intelligent race. So really, if you look at the bigger picture, we're really some kind of a lost, intelligent race, you know, spinning in a huge universe, and we're only a tiny molecular grain of sand in the infinity of no-ending space.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I'm also a believer in UFOs and extraterrestrials. It is impossible that we are alone.
That's completely impossible. And if we can put this even into more perspective, if you don't mind, Yuri, a couple of years ago, we had a man on this show by the name of Stanton Friedman, who is an absolute, he is a UFO. I mean, as far as the word expert's concerned, I don't think there's any experts in the paranormal. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as know-how and just knowing of the history and the ins and outs of it, this man, Stanton Friedman, he's an absolute genius when it comes to that. It was an honor for us to have him on the show. We'd like to have him on again.
He's actually known as the godfather of ufology.
Yeah, he is, more or less, yeah. But he put this into perspective, and you were talking about all these things that's going on this planet right now, all these terrible things that don't seem to be getting looked at all while we do spend all this money on the arms race and things like that. You know, I've heard of a man named David Cross, a comedian that I listen to, who actually had some very good insight on this. He's like, well, we put somebody on the moon. That's great. How about we try putting somebody in an apartment now? You know, when you think about it, it's a very good idea. But Stanton Friedman told us something. He's like, I'm going to tell you people what an alien would think if they flew by our planet and just, like, looked at it, like, you know, just a snapshot of the planet and kind of looked at how we did things. He's like, the report they'd give to their commander or whatever they have in their ship would be, the race on this planet is very, very, they're very aggressive, mean, meat-eating, you know, individuals that rage war on each other every, you know, it seems to be every couple of years. And it seems that other bigger parts of the planet are trying to take over smaller parts of the planet. And he went on in that manner and kind of told us things in a very broad scale. If you were looking down on this planet with no idea what was going on, which basically just those few things I put out there really put us kind of back into the dark ages when you think about it. We really haven't come that far. I mean, we can have all the modems and internets and cell phones we want. It means nothing.
I agree with you. And you know, sadly, it means nothing because there's no end. You know, it's infinity out there. So everything and anything is possible. This is why all my life I believed in aliens, in extraterrestrials. And some experts don't stop with identifying encounters of the third kind. The experience that most people or people most commonly hear about are alien abductions, for instance. I mean, you see movies and television shows about it. And alien abductions are sort of close encounters of the fourth kind.
Mm-hmm.
Although people and the media, they love to speculate about abductions, actual occurrences are considered very rare. But the media blows them out of proportion, and believers in the alien phenomenon have different theories on the origins of UFOs. I mean, they seem to focus on four main ideas, and I think you'll agree with me. First of all, UFOs reflect some form of advanced technology, and it could be perhaps extraterrestrial. I, as Uri Geller, totally believe that it is extraterrestrial. And I think you'll have to agree with me because there are too many sightings that we can just sort of brush off as hoaxes. Let's say out of 100 sightings, 98 of them are just made-up stories or people were hallucinating and faking it. I mean, even if 2% are real, then that's it.
That's enough validation for me. I'll say that.
Now, UFOs may transport time travelers. That's an interesting theory.
Mm-hmm.
UFOs may be a new form of a natural phenomenon. And that I think is happening in the Bermuda Triangle, where there are so many hundreds of books that say that aliens landed under the water and there's a huge UFO that devours all the ships and the planes. But it could be a natural phenomenon. And UFOs may be a type of a psychic phenomena. Maybe UFOs come from inner space rather than outer space. And, you know, that's the mystery of life. I love mystery, and this is why when people question my abilities or my powers, I tell them, look, I don't care if you don't believe. I would like you to, you know, see it as a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
The mysterious in the phenomena that we produce or the earth produces or animals produce. It goes on and on and on. And every time, as time goes by, there will be a new explanation and people will come up with more theories. But then new things are going to happen. You know, humanity is only, what, a quarter of a million years old?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. So going back to, say, the ancient Egyptians, I'm sure that building those pyramids and knowing the knowledge that in order for your spirit to be catapulted out of the tomb that is in the middle of the pyramid, we have to dig a channel, a tunnel, where we will allow the spirit to sort of shoot out and seed other stars. Now, where on earth did that knowledge come from?
Exactly.
Maybe we're all star children. Maybe thousands of years ago, we did indeed land on this planet with UFOs from other stars. Who knows? I believe in everything.
It's in, you know, you bring up the Egyptians.
Oh, that one has got a favorite thing.
You pushed a big red button there, Yuri.
First, I want to say something that you mentioned earlier in that. The mystery, just to appreciate
God, man,
the mystery, is something that's so important to me, and that's why I like to, you remember when we went to Indiana and I just absolutely made everybody. I'm like, we have to go to, there's this place called Spook Light Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And there you're supposed to see a ghost light. And I saw it. And I can't explain it. And it was wonderful because it's a mystery.
You can't explain it. You can't explain why it's there.
Right. I mean, they talk about swamp gases and ball lightning and blah, blah, blah. The thing is I saw this, and I saw it with my eyes,
mm-hmm.
and it was amazing.
It was absolutely amazing.
Only because it was a couple of brief flashes of light. Ooh, big deal.
Well, yeah, but still.
Yeah.
I mean,
but it shouldn't have been there.
It shouldn't have been there.
And that's the mystery, and that's why I appreciated it so very much. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and that's when we went to Indiana. Have you ever gone out, Yuri, to look at any of these things that people can't explain, or has it just always been around you?
Well, you know, I just completed a documentary for Sky Television, which will be shown on Fox in the United States,
mm-hmm.
where they asked me to somehow investigate the hauntings of Venice in Italy, mm-hmm. because there are dark stories. The facade of the tourists and the gondolas and all that and the canals is very romantic. But there's also a very dark side to Venice. And when we got there, this was just about 9 months ago, I totally shifted away from hauntings and I focused on one building called Palazzo Cadario, which, by the way, Woody Allen wanted to buy, and his wife talked him out of it because everyone that owned that palazzo died under horrible, mysterious circumstances. It was just so scary to enter that building. And my conclusions were rather odd. I did not see a ghost. We did hear sounds. But we believe that this building is cursed. and everyone owning it dies in brutal ways, is because it's so eclectic. Most of the building is made up from different artifacts and architectural objects that were looted from, say, cemeteries in the Middle East, mosques from the Far East, and they were all put together. And, you know, this building is about 900 years old. And it was so spooky and so scary. At one point, I pulled out a pendulum, and I don't really deal with pendulum, but a very famous writer called James Herbert, he writes, you know, horror novels,
mm-hmm.
Gave me this pendulum, and he told me, you know, use it if you want to. So I started sort of, you know, moving around the room with a pendulum, and it actually started, you know, sort of swaying left and right, and it was pulling me towards a fireplace. And this was a room, a red velvet room on the fifth floor of this building. And he took me to this massive stone fireplace, and I felt that the whole atmosphere in the room was so condensed, it was I could hardly breathe. And I looked very carefully at this fireplace, and I saw a tiny little piece of paper peeping out of one of the slits that was in the stone. And I pulled this out, and it was a picture of a mummified person, and that scared me so much, I just dropped it, and I ran out, and I started screaming to the crew, get out of here, this place is evil. And we actually, you know, ran out of the building in a panic, and that's really the end of the documentary, but it was so real. So I love investigating these kind of dark side of the mysterious, the paranormal, the occult. So I guess I will continue doing that.
Well, you write a lot of papers on stuff like this, too. If you go to if people out there listening to the show right now, if you haven't been to Uri-Geller, which is spelled U-R-I, then hyphen G-E-L-L-E-R.com, you're really missing out on one heck of a website.
Can I just correct you? Allow me to correct you. It's really urigeller.com. It's www.urigeller, U-R-I-G-E-L-L-E-R.com.
Oh, there's no dash in there. That's a typo. I'm sorry.
No. You'll get to the website also with a dash. But, you know, I write books. I've been writing books for, 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm just finishing my 17th book. I was very pleased that Reader's Digest published my last book, which is quite quite extraordinary because, you know, Reader's Digest are a very conservative publishing company.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
The book is called Life Signs, and in America it came out in a very beautiful coffee table form. You know, and when I write a book, it's immediately translated into about 30 languages.
Wow.
So I make many of my books available to read free off charge on my website.
Because, yes.
You know, there are people who have no money. So there are many books that you can just download and you can print them out and you can all just read them on my website.
But it is
an amazing site because it took me about, sort of, it expanded automatically 15 years in the making. And it's actually bigger than CNN's website.
Oh, my God. It's a huge site.
I get about 900,000 hits a week.
Oh, my God.
I believe it.
The site is absolutely huge. There's so many papers on there, like I was saying, for you to read on these ideas we've been talking about here for a while. The first time I went there, which was a very long time ago, mind you, I didn't even know where to start then. I'm like, okay, where do I get here? Yes.
Do you know what I did a few years ago? I got an idea to take a spoon, lock the spoon, place it inside a glass case, and we place the glass case inside a safe. Now, I attached the spoon to a little meter, which I called the bendometer,
mm-hmm.
from the word bending.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I challenged people out there, and I said to them, look, here you are. You have a spoon on my website, which was live, because it was filmed 24 hours a day, and straight into my website. And people could actually see the spoon live. And I ask people to try to bend the spoon with the power of the mind. And we actually offered $1 million to anyone who can do it. No one, of course, succeeded. Even I couldn't do it. I tried to do it through the internet, and it would not work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing how and what you can do today with the internet. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do right now for your listeners.
Okay.
We're going to do a little experiment.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter if we're live or we're taped or whatever. What is important for you to give out your email address and your telephone numbers at the end of the show.
Okay.
And see what response you're going to have. I guarantee you, you are going to have a tremendous reaction.
Okay.
So here we go.
All right.
Everybody who's listening right now to this show, I want you to go quickly and get your broken watches. I'm sure you all have some broken watch or a clock or a pocket watch or even a broken house appliance. And bring it back to the radio set or to the whatever you're listening this show on, whether it's the internet or a radio. Bring a spoon with you.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to grab a spoon right now, Yuri, okay? And Will's actually grabbing a broken watch from his room right now. So hang tight.
Okay, now let's give people, your listeners, a chance to do this. Go and get a broken watch, a broken clock, a broken pocket watch, and bring a spoon along too.
Do you know what's interesting? My mother's watch just broke over the weekend. It may turn on in a few minutes.
Okay, I can't obviously guarantee that this is going to work for everyone, but it is something that made me famous decades ago, and it still works because it's really the power of the mind, your mind, the people listening to the show.
Uh-huh.
I'm only a catalyst. I'm only an enabler. I'm only a trigger to the powers of your mind. And at the end of the experiment, which will take maybe a minute and a half, that's all. Will you please read out your email address? And yeah. I mean, do people sometimes call you up?
Well, we have a lot of our communication is done obviously via email, so that's our main thing. We do have a line for people calling to.
So that's what you have to do. You will give out your email address at the end of the experiment, and then let's see what response you have, and then if you do get emails, you can basically read them out or contact the people and ask them how they felt when it happened. Okay, let's do the experiment.
I'll give a number for voicemails.
Yeah, we can have people leave voicemails if they want too, Yuri. So
okay.
Cool.
By now, I'm sure everyone has a broken watch or something that is not working in your presence.
Yeah, I have a spoon.
I'd like you to place a spoon on your computer or whatever, again, the box that this voice comes out from or next to it, but put the spoon on something solid.
Okay, I'm going to put it
now, here we go. On the count of three, I want Scott, Doug, and Will, together with me, we'll focus on the watches first, to shout out the word work. We'll do it three times. Now, you people at home, wind up your broken watches. I know, they're broken, but if they do have a winder, no matter how old the watch is, quickly wind them up and place them in the palm of your hands. Now, Scott, Doug, and Will, are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
So on the count of three, we shout work.
Okay.
And then I'll say 1, 2, 3 again, and we shout work. Here we go. 1, 2, 3,
work.
One more time. 1, 2, 3,
work.
Now, you do it also, people listening to us. You shout out the word work. And imagine yourselves, imagine a will, a force, an energy to emanate out of your brain and fix those broken timepieces. Let's do it one last time. 1, 2, 3,
work!
Okay, now open your hands and look at the faces of your watches. If you don't have a second hand, just lift the watch or the clock to your ears and listen. Is it ticking? If you do have a second hand, is it moving? if the spoon moved or bent or leaped off or fell off, do let us know. Now, if nothing happened to you, don't be disappointed, because this doesn't happen to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen all the time. But if something occurred to you, if the spoon moved, or if a watch started ticking, please email us. Doug, will you give out the email address, please?
Yes. The email address is just going to be ghostlytalk@ghostlytalk.com.
Yes.
And that'll go directly to us hosts of Ghostly Talk.
All the hosts,
Okay, see it.
I can guarantee you that you are going to have many, many emails from people who will tell you, Doug, Scott, and Will, I can't believe this. My watch was given to me by my mother or my grandfather. It's 40 years old. Some of them are 80 years old. Never worked. I took it to a watchmaker. The watchmaker said, forget it. I can't fix it. There's a broken part in it. They don't manufacture it anymore. Keep it as a sentimental object. I cannot believe it, but it's ticking. These will be their responses that you will be getting.
You said there was also a voicemail line. Did you want to give that out, though?
Right. I was looking for it, and I the only one I remember offhand is area code 586-649-2700.
Give that out one more time.
Well, and then there's an extension.
Okay, what's the extension?
It's 586-649-2700. The extension is 733-778.
Okay.
Tell me, where is this show emanating from? Are you in your, is it an office? Is it a studio? Or is it your home?
It's kind of a combination of all three of those, Yuri.
Okay, and where are you exactly based? Near which big city?
Detroit, Michigan.
But so you are in Detroit?
We're about 2 or 3 miles away from Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, we're
great.
Just
I had very dear friends in Detroit. I don't know if you remember Max Fisher.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and Mary Fisher, who is also a friend, and as you know, she has AIDS,
mm-hmm.
and she actually talked about it from the White House, and she really helped thousands of people who have AIDS. She's a great, great person. So I spent quite a long time in Detroit. And were you all born there, or where are you all from?
We were basically all born here. We're all natives of Detroit.
Born and raised in the Detroit area,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
This is where we're all from.
And may I ask you all how old you are? Scott, how old are you?
I am 30.
And Doug?
I'm 38.
And Will?
26.
And what made you all get together and create a show like this?
Oh, boy.
Well, it's interesting, because it started out that... There wasn't that much, but this was 4 or 5 years
ago.
Yeah,
this is a long time ago.
There wasn't that much on the internet. I mean, there was a lot on the internet. There were ghost stories, there were sounds, there were pictures, but there wasn't much multimedia. You could download some shows and things like that, but they were the nationally and internationally produced shows.
Yes.
They weren't anything like by hobbyists or you know. Just people who were out there doing ghost hunts and things like that.
Yeah.
And I had gotten into ghost hunting, and that's how I met Scott L. So I had met him maybe 3 times. And I said, you know what I want to do? I want to get together with you, and we will sit in, at the time, in my basement.
Yeah.
We've moved since then. But we'd sit in my basement, and we will just talk for an hour about ghosts and ghost hunting and anything paranormal. And we'll tape it, and we'll put it on the internet. Well, since then, we've gotten a little bit better. We've
a little bit.
We've gotten, people like to listen to us, and so we're live on the internet. We're also live on several radio stations, care of OmniSound.
OmniSound, yes.
And we're live all over the place. And
it's amazing. Well, I'll tell you what I will do. On my radio show, which I do every Saturday,
mm-hmm.
which goes out coast to coast in the United States,
mm-hmm.
in 430 markets,
yes, it does.
I will plug your show and your station.
Thank you very much, Yuri.
So make sure you email me the exact
URL.
Website where people can hear it.
Yeah, for, excellent. Definitely, for sure. I mean,
and, you know, also with my show, I met Doug Steffen, who is the main producer and presenter, who was actually a farmer. He lives in Boston. I met him 11 years ago in Los Angeles when I was promoting one of my books. It was called Uri Geller's Mind Power Kit.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about the paranormal. He was then on one of the big LA shows. And we had hundreds of callers. And Doug realized, my God, he said, this is interesting stuff. The paranormal, ghosts, apparitions, UFOs, pyramid energy. And we became friends. And ever since then, every Saturday, 10:30 local time here in England,
mm-hmm.
I'm on with him for half an hour. And that's very early morning in New York. And it's late at night in California.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, you know, Doug's show is the seventh largest radio show in the United States.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been around for a long time. I've done Howard Stern and, you know, George Noory, because his show is also amazingly big.
We got to go on Coast to Coast with George.
Back in August. We were back
in
August.
We were physically in the studio with him, so we got to meet him in person.
Well,
yeah.
The logistics was amazing. You want to talk about synchronicity and things happening for a reason, Uri? It just happened to work out. Well, I also bugged them a lot.
Well, yeah.
But they happened to be broadcasting live at the OnStar building here in Detroit, Michigan, one night. They go around the country sometimes, and I just happened to hear this one night when I was listening to the show. And, after I heard that, I'm like, well, you know, that'd be great. And we managed it. We were able. They were nice enough to let us come on there and talk about what we do on the show and as ghost hunters and stuff like that. So we've been on there. It's an amazing show. George Norris is an amazing show.
George is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, and all those shows are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really helping this whole paranormal awareness thing. And I think people are becoming more aware of the paranormal and their spirituality, or are we losing it over time, or is it about the same
as
the 60s?
I think that there is a huge thrust towards the quest of discovery, you know, find yourself, who am I, how can I better my life, and, you know, from the paranormal, it's spirituality. People are getting closer to God. They want to experience the power of prayer. People want to learn how to be positive thinkers. Again, how to be motivated and inspired. People want, again, to better their spiritual life. And if they can do that, then they can also better their physical life and their financial life, their financial situation, their work, relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you've got television shows constantly, whether it's about angels or UFOs or mysteries of the universe. You know, big studios and movie studios capitalize on the interests of people. I mean, look at Steven Spielberg. Look how many years ago he did E.T., Third Encounters. Unbelievable then, you know, who thought of, you know, making a big studio movie about extraterrestrial contact. Today, you hear about individuals who tell you, oh, I've been abducted, you know, there's some kind of a tool that was, you know, injected into my brain. You hear the most bizarre stories, yet coming from logical people who, some of them are scientists, mm-hmm. some of them, you know, are teachers in universities. And they say, yeah, I do believe in it. Again, remember, the skeptics are a tiny, tiny minority. They're basically, they're non-existent. Because who wants to be a skeptic in today's world? I want to be a believer. I want to be an open-minded person. And so do you. And if you're an open-minded man or woman, then you're allowing that positive force to touch your soul faster than someone who says, oh, I don't want to believe in that. I'm an agnostic. I'm an atheist. I believe in nothing. That's a negative person. And a negative person will find their lives negative and more difficult to live in.
Well, I always tell people, you know, especially what we do now on the show, we come in contact with a lot of people every week here.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people I've talked to, friends or stuff like that, anything in the past, they look at their life and they go, oh, God, you know, my life's a mess. I can't stand this. I hate, they're angry. And I always like to tell people, I'm like, look at yourself. Really, really close. Honestly, look at yourself. Don't rationalize things. Don't make excuses for yourself. Look at your life and see the problems that you have and realize the majority of them you've created yourself. You've created the majority of them yourself. And you can fix those things. You can fix that stuff. That's cool. But a lot of people, I think, spend more time trying to make excuses for themselves and blame other people or blame other things than to really look closely into themselves and go, you know what, maybe I'm the problem here. Maybe I should fix this thing. Maybe I should take responsibility for myself.
Or people create problems that don't really exist yet. They don't sleep at night because they build and they amplify a worry that will never really come into their lives. But they build on it and they say, oh, wow, how terrible. This is going to happen to me. What am I going to do? I'm going to lose my house. I'll lose my job. And it's not there at all. You know, and I keep telling, you know, I get about 300 emails a day, so you can imagine the interesting emails that I read and answer.
Yeah.
I answer every email. So anyone who emails me, and my email address is on my website,
which
I'll just mention again,
is
urigeller.com.
Yeah.
I tell them, you know, cross a bridge when that problem comes. You know, today positive thinking is a skill for stress relief, you know. Stress management requires a positive perspective, knowing how to turn pessimism into optimism. Many people are so pessimistic, and you can test them very quickly, and it's like, you know, is your glass half empty or half full?
Mm-hmm.
How do you answer this question? And how you answer this question may reflect on your outlook on life and whether you're optimistic or pessimistic. And in fact, studies show that these personality traits, optimism and pessimism, can actually affect how well you live and even how long you live. This is why I started the program by telling you that people who pray, people who have faith, people who meditate, people who do yoga, are people who will live longer, have less disease, and will be happier people. And self-talk is very, very important. What is self-talk? It is the endless stream of thoughts that run through your head every day. Think about it. You constantly self-talk. You're constantly running ideas and thoughts in your mind. These automatic thoughts can be positive or negative. Now, if the thoughts that run through your head are mostly negative, then your outlook on life is likely to be pessimistic. And if your thoughts are mostly positive, you're likely an optimist. So my advice to all our listeners is to trigger a positive pattern of thought. And you can do that every morning when you wake up, when you get out of bed, like, you know, you automatically go to the bathroom and wash your teeth. You've got to program your mind, and it takes you seconds. You say, hey, today I'm going to have a great day. Today will be a good, successful day for me. Today I'm going to have fun. Today positive things are going to happen to me. So what you're doing really is you're programming your mind to attract those positive events during the day. And you know that researchers continue to explore the effects of optimism on health. The health benefits of optimism may provide are enormous. You know, they can decrease stress. You can have greater resistance to catching the common cold, a sense of well-being and improved health in general. It can go even to extremes like reduce risk of coronary and artery disease. I mean, it's amazing. Ask any doctor and he will tell you, if you are facing an operation or if you are after an operation, if you are a positive thinker, you will heal faster.
Yes.
And I think you know that I'm talking basically common sense.
Well, and we tell people this as far as health goes. You know, it scares me half to death what I see going on, especially in America today, Yuri. It's that it seems as it just the basic common neck pain or anything. I just had a bad neck pain this week, for example. It was killing me. But luckily, we have our own special ghostly talk masseuse who comes in here and rubs us down and takes care of us. She actually helped me with my neck, and it was really knotted up, and there was a lot of muscle there. But not once in my mind, and I have trained my mind, I've programmed my mind to do this, Yuri. When I have a pain, when I'm not feeling good, when I am under the weather, so to say, I don't run for the pill bottle. I don't run for drugs. I don't run straight to drugs. There are so many people out there as soon as they have the most just something that seems just a little off center for them, they run straight for the drugs. And
well,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you know that the power of the mind over the body is one of the more remarkable aspects of human existence?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you will agree with me. Until recently, this phenomenon was dismissed as nothing more than what mysticism. By skeptics and even Western scientists, but now science is providing clinical evidence that the mind can indeed have an influence on bodily function.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this comes, I think this experiment was conducted at Stanford University. That's actually where I was tested 35 years ago in California. This test showed that patients in chronic pain can use mental exercises to reduce their physical suffering through a technique known as neurofeedback. And this has been validated under, you know, rigorous, scientifically controlled conditions. And I think this will be the future. Now, once again, I'm not saying, no way am I saying to abandon conventional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
But parallel with conventional medicine, you must believe that your mind can heal. You know, I built a pyramid in my garden, and I think we are coming very closely to the end of the show now.
Unfortunately,
but
no,
I built a pyramid
in
my garden where I invite terminally ill children 7-8 times a year. Now, beside the spoon bending and entertaining them, which is a great placebo effect, then I tell them, look, you all know what you have, because these kids are not stupid. You know, some of them know that they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, you can definitely fight your disease with the power of self-belief, faith, and positive thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this, I'm not a healer, and I'm definitely not a miracle worker. But I've seen little miracles, not from me, but from these children. Because some of these kids were sent home to die. And, you know, they go on charity tours to the world, they go to Disneyland
mm-hmm.
and Disney World, and, you know, they sort of, it's like a wish kind of a charity. It's their last wish.
Mm-hmm.
And these children, many of them, who were sent to die 10, 15 years ago, are young men now.
Oh, my God.
And I get emails from them, and they tell me, you know, Uri, you don't know me. I'm not expecting you to remember me, but I was in your house. This is before maybe that I built the pyramid. And you told me to believe in myself, and you told me to be a positive thinker. And guess what? I beat the cancer. So, you know, this shows me that the human brain is the most powerful computer in the universe.
Absolutely.
And there's no doubt that it contains elements that someday we'll be able to master and use, and then medicine will go out of business, and we will actually never be sick, because
mm-hmm.
we will just train our minds not to allow any disease to come into our lives.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I think about that. Like I said before, it seems there's a lot of people that use medicine as a crutch nowadays, and it scares me to see that people just go straight for the medicine. I have to say, though, you know, medicine saved my father. He saved his life. just this year, guys, you guys know that.
Right.
I mean, he had heart problems. But it was a combination of the both, just to give a good example out there. My father had physical heart problems. But he also was a very, and Yuri, I hope you're listening, I love my dad.
Yeah.
He's an awesome guy. I love the guy. Everybody here knows him. But he's a very, I don't want to say negative, but he's a pessimistic person about a lot of things. He thinks about the negative. And he has his reasons, and they're very logical reasons. But he was told directly, look, Mr. L, you need to calm down. You need to mellow yourself out, and this is going to help you heal. The medicine helped him, too. That saved his life. But he also had to, and my dad's like a Zen Buddhist now. He's like totally mellow now.
Is he happier?
Well, you guys saw him. He's just so much more mellow now. Yeah. I mean, you guys have known him for a number of years. And before, he wasn't like mean and angry and mean person, but he just cuts through all the BS and takes care of business. But that is what was hurting him, too. That's a good example right there. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Yuri.
My message to all our listeners, first of all, if there are kids listening, teenagers, my message is very crystal clear. It is believe in yourself, be a positive thinker, be motivated and inspired to focus on school, try to go to university, never, ever smoke or touch drugs or get drunk, because, you know, I'm totally and utterly against smokers. I think it's devastating. And it's harmful to others. So that's my message. Do not smoke. And have faith. And be nice and charming and smile. And use your charisma. Use your charm. Everyone is charming, no matter how you look, where you come from, the color of your skin. Means nothing. You know that I spent many, many nights and days with Michael Jackson. I'm surprised you didn't bring him up. Michael was and is still a gullible, naive person. I warned him many, many times not to surround himself with children, although I always believed that he was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
I always stood up for him when I was interviewed by, you know, all the networks in the United States last year, from Fox to NBC to ABC to CBS, you name it, I was on every program. I always said, it is inconceivable for me that Michael is a child molester.
Mm-hmm.
And I always believed that he was innocent. And he was found innocent. But talking about the color, the skin, it is also a lot to do with your childhood. So if parents are listening, you know, if your kids are watching war movies or death or negativity, you know, that will, you know, influence them as they grow older. It's fear-based. You know, a lot of these news shows are trying to instill fear in you. And it's a lot to do with the political situation and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But my message again, try to keep away from violence. Don't show violence to your children. My kids grew up, I did not allow any weapons, any toy weapons into their possessions. So the message is, use your positivity and be nice to others, and it'll come back to you. Adopt a positive attitude. A positive attitude reduces your susceptibility to many, many things. And you will be a happier person. You will be a healthier person. And you might be a wealthier person. Because if you are a good person, then money will come to your possession in one way or another. And that's how I want to end the show, to say God bless everyone. I love you all. And once again, the three of you, you were really nice, and I hope to be on your show again.
Oh, I hope so.
Yuri, I have to say, and I think everybody here shares my opinion, that it's been an honor speaking to you. It really has, because you have been a part of our lives for my whole life. And you've been there. You've always been there.
And your message is it's very timely. I mean, this is the beginning of the year.
Yeah, we're talking New Year's Day. This is New Year's Day.
New Year's Day of 2007.
Yep. 2006.
It's 2006 now?
Yeah.
Oh, oops. I lost the year. I'm sorry. 2006. First day of 2006. And what a better message than to say, hey, stop. Love yourself. Yeah. Yep. Honor yourself.
Yep.
Be yourself without all those, ignore all those outside influences that are negative.
And use your consciousness, because there is something called human potential, human consciousness, which was actually validated in American universities. Human consciousness is enormous. Like I said before, we're all connected to each other with an invisible spiritual thread through which we can transmit emotions, the power of love, the power of prayer. Use that channel. So even if you just pray for world peace in your tiny capacity, you don't have to go to a church or a synagogue or a mosque. You can do it in your own mind. You are contributing to the bigger connection, to the united humanity, to the billions of people out there. So just think that your little prayer, your little wanting, your contribution to world peace means something. So we all count, and we're all equal. So I love you all, Scott, Doug, and Will. I'm going to plug your show on my show, and maybe one day I'll interview you, the three of you.
That would be exciting.
That would be absolutely. I think that would absolutely blow us all away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Yuri.
Can you hold on the line for one more second, Yuri, if you don't mind?
Yep. And listen, guys, will you be very kind once this goes out?
Mm-hmm.
Can you email me the show, and I will put it on my website, and I'll get a direct link to your site, okay?
You'll have all that information when you check your email tomorrow. I guarantee you that.
Okay, but I need this whole interview so I can put it on my website.
No problem. You're going to have all that. You'll have the link to download it directly from our website.
Yet another thing for yurigeller.com.
Yes.
www.yurigeller.com.
More stuff to add to this giant site. Guys, I don't even know what to say here. Week by week, we get blown away here by what we do on this show. And we hope that this affects us, affects you as the listeners the same way. I'm almost speechless.
I am too. So all I can say is we are up against the top of the hour.
So
we have to go.
Yeah.
Of course, we are.
We're all a little scatterbrained right now.
Yuri is amazing.
Yes, he is.
Yuri, we have to thank Yuri Geller of yurigeller.com for being so kind to be on the show. We also thank you to
Terry Gamble.
Terry Gamble.
Yes, that was amazing.
Amazing photograph. Amazing
stuff. Yes, yes.
And, of course, next week, is it still a surprise?
It's still a surprise. There's still things going on. We have to get it worked out. You know.
Special surprise next week.
Yes,
absolutely incredible show lined up. If it all falls together.
Yeah.
Which we hope it will.
I hope it does.
Next week will be interesting. So to all you podcasters, to all you listeners, to everybody out there in the internet land.
However you get this show.
However you download or get the show, or those folks listening on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for listening.
God, guys.
Happy
New Year.
2006.
This is going to be a hell of a year, I think.
I hope so.
Thanks again to Yuri Geller for coming on the show and schooling us, like I said he was going to do on the website. He's schooling all of us.
And with that, this has been Ghostly Talk, and I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
See you next week.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
Media.
need to go someplace where a man can think.
The media become